Bet the Board in conjunction with NASCAR presents Stay Green. Stay Green is your first stop for all the metrics, matchups, and money-making opportunities at the track each race week. This is Stay Green, the NASCAR betting podcast. Here are your hosts, Todd Furman and racing analyst Chris Wormy.
Welcome into the Stay Green podcast, a Bet the Board production in conjunction with NASCAR. And like we always say around these parts, time flies when you're having fun, and there are three races remaining before we'll understand and see who the 2022 series champion is. I am your host, Todd Furman, joined as always by racing analyst and professional sports bettor, Chris Wormy. And Wormser, I got to give you a little bit of a golf clap, but you know I don't like to say nice things or hurl accolades in your general direction to allow you to have a bigger ego than you already do. But tremendous job rolling solo last week in my absence. I'm off gallivanting in Nashville trying to live my best life. You're home grinding, and I couldn't have asked for a better show for one man to put forth.
Hey, thanks, Todd. It was actually, like, I thought that it was going to be really easy. Oh, I have all my notes here. I was wrong. It's much more difficult than I anticipated. So it's good to have you back, and it's good to have you back for my favorite week of the year.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, I know a lot of people that are NASCAR fans, when the schedule comes out, they start counting days down to Daytona. It's one of the things Larry McReynolds has made extremely popular in the NASCAR community. Meanwhile, you pull out your red pen, you go through the schedule, and you try and figure out exactly when we're going to Homestead. A little bit more traditional scheduling spot now, as it plays a massive role in defining who will be punching their ticket to Phoenix to get into the Final Four. As always, though, for the new listeners to Stay Green, we break things up so it's relatively easy to follow. Stage one, all about the race recap and what we learned at Las Vegas. Plenty of things to discuss, gambling related and otherwise. Stage two, as we've taken to during the playoff portion of the schedule, more or less a reset, trying to identify the odds, look at some of the prices, and see if there is a little bit of opportunity. And most importantly, stage three, it's all about breaking down the upcoming race, talking about track comps, track specs, and everything that goes into arriving at a betting decision. So Worm, Joey Logano, three laps to go, gets by Ross Chastain, much to my chagrin. I would have loved the one car to secure passage to Phoenix, but here we are. When you look at the way that race played out, much more traditional in that playoff parity that you saw a lot of the playoff drivers, not necessarily in stage one, but in the latter stages of stage two, and especially in stage three, have a great opportunity to grab a checkered flag.
Well, you saw Penske just were rockets. I mean, the 12 and the 22, there was a point in the race when, you know, I was messaging with someone throughout the race. It's like, wow, who's going to pass these guys? And that was something that we just haven't seen, you know, week in and week out, was at Penske speed. And I'll tell you what, I don't see it stopping. So definitely a great race, you know, for Logano to kind of, you know, punch his ticket. By the way, this guy qualifies well at Phoenix and is really good at Phoenix. So for those of you that think that, you know, that Chase Elliott, you know, he'll make it to Phoenix and he'll be able to roll there. The 22, the 11, and those guys are going to be good. So I thought it was a great race. It was a lot of passing. You know, I was a little nervous watching the Xfinity race at Vegas, thinking, oh man, if it's tough to pass an Xfinity, it's going to be even harder with the cup cars. But man, I thought that they put on a good show and a great race.
Yeah, I mean, tires came into play. We've talked about a reliable tire compound from Goodyear. You had to use a little bit of strategy. Thought Chastain getting to clean air might be enough to cement that victory, but Joey Logano was pretty candid in his analysis of the race. Said, you know, we played strategy. We thought we had an opportunity late, makes the pass with three laps to go, and despite not leading the most laps in the race, got the checkered flag, which is always most important. And we can joke all we want about Joey Logano. I mean, we've talked at great lengths about the 22 and the model of consistency. I like to think, Worm, that your brother has stamped him with the Wormy family
yes,
approval,
he has.
Given the fact his name was on the car, the Coca-Cola 600.
Yeah, I think that, you know, Logano, here's the deal. Like, a lot of people are talking about, well, he won't catch Chastain. That's what, you know, kind of the conversation that people are having on Twitter. It's like, by the way, he was going to catch Chastain if they were on the same tires with a little bit longer run. The fact he had 13 lap fresher tires was like, obviously he was going to get there. And then as far as the 22, you know, that's near and dear to my family's heart. And, you know, my mom always is, how'd Logano do? Or, you know, and it's funny because, you know, I'm not a huge Logano fan, but I understand what my mom is. And, you know, he's going to be, he could easily win this championship. I'll tell you that right now.
He's going to be an extremely tough out, and we'll get to Joey Logano's updated odds to win the championship as part of stage two, along with kind of looking at Ross Chastain and some of the success he's had at mile and a half tracks and why there should still be optimism for trackhouse racing in general. But you mentioned the speed from Team Penske, and you talked about Joey Logano. He got the finish he was looking for. Unfortunately, Ryan Blaney, not the case. Finishes the race 28th despite having a car capable of finishing inside the top five. Has dug himself a little bit of a hole. And somewhere along the way, if the 12 is going to be a championship contender or win the championship, you think he's got to win the race. He now has his work cut out for him. A little bit steeper hill to climb given how he finished the unfortunate part of Sunday's race.
Yeah, and coming into a track that he hasn't been super great at, or even at that type of track, you know, high wear tracks, Blaney tends to struggle. This is kind of the worst case scenario for him. You know, he had a race winning car, in my opinion, and for him to not even finish inside, you know, the top 25 really hurts. I mean, this is the stuff you just have to avoid if you're the 12 team. And the fact that they weren't able to do it has to be super disheartening heading into this week, where I'm not going to say he's going to struggle, but I think that there's going to be other teams that will certainly be faster than that 12 this weekend. It's hard because he could have won at Vegas. And so that you go from, you know, thinking you have a chance to win and lock yourself in and get that first win and, you know, to, hey, now we're 28th and we're on the outside looking in. Ooh, with a high tire wear track coming up. Definitely not the finish that the 12 team needed.
Were you surprised by some of the struggles that we saw from Hendrick Motorsports? I mean, Chase Elliott in the wake of that finish, and I'll quote him directly, when you perform that poorly, you get poor results. That's how it works. And succinct to the point may or may not have encapsulated some of the struggles that we've seen from the nine, who we had talked about earlier in the year, and regression is a big term in sports betting, that the finishes weren't indicative of the kind of cars they were bringing to the track. Suddenly it's now time to pay the piper, and he's actually been a little bit unlucky, yet still finds himself as not the overwhelming favorite, but the favorite to win the whole thing, despite not bringing a car that's been capable of winning, especially at mile and a half tracks.
This race by the 9 team was an absolute joke. You want to know what his driver rating was for Chase Elliott? 57.4. I mean, he just raised
it. Sounds like your GPA is a Division III football player.
Yeah, it was. I mean, this was a terrible run for this car. I mean, here's what I think may have happened. Maybe they knew that they were kind of, hey, we're probably going to make the final, you know, the final race. They're going to make the championship four. They have a comfortable lead. I don't know if maybe they're looking ahead and they just kind of rode off Vegas, maybe. But
can you do that, at this time of the year? I get when you're tinkering during the regular season, and I'm fully convinced that may have been part of the plan for William Byron, but that feels an awfully risky move to make with the nine. If you're going to define the season, it's championship or bust.
I know. It's so weird, Todd. I thought his driver rating was actually going to be higher than this. I looked it up as, like, just a second ago. I thought it was going to be like 65 or 70. And to see it at 57.4, I mean, he started 20th, he finished 21st, one fast lap. This is just at a track where, hey, if you got horsepower and you got speed, you go win at Las Vegas. And that's what Logano did. And I don't know. I think you're right. I think that they got so many great finishes, and they took advantage of situations. They were able to win races late, but they were getting good results. And that's what's put them in this position. And now the speed, their lack thereof, is kind of showing through. And I don't know if that will matter much at Phoenix, but you still got to get to Phoenix. And Homestead hasn't been great to Chase either. So
No, I mean, the mile and a half package for HMS honestly has felt off for extended stretches this season. Now, we've seen it before from the nine car. He runs exceptionally well at Martinsville, so this all may be a moot point. But at this point, he's not doing himself any favors to allow to build up a little bit of a cushion with two races to go before we know the four that'll be moving on. When we look at mile and a halfs, one team stood out, though, to me, and that, of course, was Joe Gibbs Racing. You look at Denny Hamlin, who comes home with a fifth place finish, as I look through this and make sure I want to get some of the drivers right. Fifth place finish for him. Kyle Busch, a third place finish. Back-to-back podium finishes for the 18, by the way, after finishing outside the top 10 for what felt like 100 races in a row. Martin Truex comes home seventh. Unfortunately for them, the one teammate that needed a great finish didn't get it, and we'll get to the reason why he didn't get it, but did Joe Gibbs Racing overall speed give you reason for optimism to think that the 11 and 20 have what it takes to compete this weekend at Homestead and still are viable championship contenders?
Yeah, let's start with the 11. The 11 has just been a grinder this year. Like, they had a rough week of practice. They started 31st. He hit the bump in qualifying and got a little loose. I mean, they qualified behind J.J. Yaley. They had a poor pit stall selection. I mean, this was an uphill battle out of this team. And, man, he was just up there and doing very Denny Hamlin things. I didn't see the speed out of him that I saw out of the 18. You know, the 18 was pretty fast and arguably the fastest car till he spins out. You can just put that record right on repeat on a mile and a half track. The 18 will be the fastest car until he spins out. It makes it really hard to bet on or against this guy because you just never know what you're going to get. He's such a tease from a live betting perspective. It's like, wow, he's up seven spots. He's running the fastest times. You know, his crew chief is coming on and saying, hey, you're running, you know, the fastest laps and you're in 11th place. And then he spins out and he kind of disappears. And then towards the end of the race, he was right there. And he was coming for the leaders. If Logano didn't make quick work of Chastain, which I will say Chastain, I think, was really smart about just taking that second place finish. Logano is not a guy you want to mess with. Like,
know when to fight your battles. Yes. That would not have been a battle I'm fighting if I'm driving the one car.
But Kyle was coming. And he had a fast car. So, you know, you're going to see speed out of the 19 and 18, whether they can get out of their own way and get a finish or even a win at Homestead. I think that this is a track where they could do it. But, you know, it's a spin every week with the 18, and it's tough to invest in him.
I mean, the speed that we're seeing out of Tyler Reddick driving the 8 car, knowing Kyle Busch is going to slot in there, I know every driver isn't created equally, has to be awfully scary for the entire collective field if Kyle Busch wants to give RCR the first championship that they have had in an eternity. So keep your eyes on Kyle Busch. I'm very curious to see where he'll open to win next year's championship when those odds become available. Obviously, Christopher Bell's day ended prematurely, and it was a Toyota teammate, at least in theory, responsible for it. Bell collected in collateral damage, and as a result, we see the first suspension for a Cup Series driver of Bubba Wallace since 2015, when Matt Kenseth was given a two-race suspension for his altercation, dust-up, Donnybrook, whatever you want to call it, with the five. Worm, I've watched NASCAR not nearly as long as you. I didn't know what the hell I was watching unfold in real time Sunday afternoon.
It was like the Twilight Zone there for a second. You know, Bubba had a fast car, a race-winning car, in my opinion, and kind of got shuffled back in traffic and was working his way back up to the front. Now, here's the deal. Larson washed him up the track, and Larson would be the first to say, hey, he had reason to be upset. Okay, he did hit the wall. It wasn't that hard. Whether he had a race-winning car at that point or not, I don't know. But it certainly wasn't a last-place finish. He had a better car than that. And if I'm his team, I'm pissed. You know, they work their asses off on these cars. And to have your driver just lose his cool. And I think that that's the issue, the biggest issue I had, is he lost his cool for like 3 minutes. And was just, and then like pushing Kyle Larson, like, come on, Kyle Larson wanted none of that. And I don't blame him, you know, Bubba came across really entitled and kind of passive aggressive with, you know, some of his comments and, you know, I know they're not used to me racing up there. It's like, nope, everyone's pretty much used to you racing up there now. It has nothing. It was not because it was you. Okay, he was just racing hard, and you know, to walk on the track, I mean, the fact that NASCAR said there's a pedestrian on the track and they were talking about Bubba Wallace. I mean, whoa, that's, yeah. It just bad luck. NASCAR, especially with all the safety stuff that's been going on, they had no choice but to suspend him. You know, I just think it's just a bad look for sponsors, team, you know, his fans. Gives us raw deal.
Yeah, credit to NASCAR for stepping in. I know it's not easy to suspend drivers by any stretch of the imagination. It takes unusual on-track occurrences, but when safety, to your point, has become a major discussion topic for all parties involved, that Denny Hamlin's weighing in, Joey Logano's weighing in with an interview he did early in the week, Kevin Harvick on social media. Clearly, it's front and center, front of mind for some of these veteran drivers. Bubba will get a race day to sit out, think about what he's done, and hopefully come back and drive with a little bit more maturity in that particular spot. But again, this has been a season unlike any that we've seen, and clearly, every time you think you've seen everything so far in 22, we realize we haven't seen even a fraction of it.
Yeah.
I'm waving the green. Well, I'm going to wave the green, white checkered flag unless you have something you want to
say. Yeah, I just want to. I want to talk about Chase Briscoe and also Justin Haley for a moment. I mean, Chase Briscoe did not look that great in practice. He didn't qualify that well. And this isn't a great track for him. Chase is usually good when you have to, you know, rip the wall and there's tire fall off. That's where I think Chase is the best, at a place like Darlington or Homestead this week. But he was struggling kind of all day, sitting, you know, between 10th and 15th, really struggling. And I'll tell you what, that team got him off pit road in 8th with 4 fresh tires, and he got a hell of a restart, and he drove up there and had a chance to win this race. And I think if it stays green and there's not that that caution that I can't remember came out for maybe Landon Castle or something, I think that Chase Briscoe wins that race, and or Justin Haley. Justin Haley, what a run. 2 tires out there out front. He's got Briscoe running him down, and he's got fast cars and the 22 and the 1 chasing him. And he's out there leading laps. And I think that it would have been a nail biter to see if the 4 tires that Briscoe had actually would have forced Haley to maybe make a move that, you know, maybe got him into the wall. But great run by both of those teams. I'm a little bit high on Briscoe this week, but Justin Haley, I think he's done a hell of a job in that car. And I think you add AJ Allmendinger and you have Haley, I think that's going to be a team that's going to win races next year. Allmendinger for sure, and maybe even Haley.
Yeah, the future looks bright for Colic Racing. You mentioned Justin Haley's current form over the last 4 races. He's got a pair of top 5 finishes and quietly has been the model of consistency, not necessarily with top 10s, but you can count on him finishing inside the top 20. You add, to your point, a veteran like AJ Allmendinger to the Cup Series, and I think things are only going to get better for them, and no reason to believe, with parity being the word to describe the entire season, that anything will be different when we get to 2023. You can follow Chris on Twitter. That's at Chris Wermy 15, ChrisWerme15. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there as well. Most importantly, follow the podcast for all things Bet the Board at Bet the Board Pod. And as we've done so far this postseason for Stage 2, it's all about a playoff reset. And a quick look at the odds board sees Chase Elliott still listed as the favorite at a price just shy of 2-1. Joey Logano, who we know will be racing for a championship in Phoenix, at a price under 3-1. Denny Hamlin, right around that plus 550, 6-1 range. Ross Chastain, plus 7.5 or 8-1. And that's where things start to get interesting, with Ryan Blaney, William Byron, anywhere as low as 12-1, upwards of 15. Christopher Bell, 20-1 thereabouts, and Chase Briscoe, the long shot on the board at 40-1. Apparently, Worm, you don't want your last name to end in B, otherwise you're on the wrong side of the cut line. Byron, Briscoe, Blaney, and Bell all on the wrong side after Las Vegas. When you look at the bottom 4, who are you most optimistic about as a viable long shot to punch their ticket to get to Phoenix?
Oof. I'm gonna say Chris Bell.
You can say none if you want.
I'm gonna say Chris
Bell. Shocking. I asked these questions and I know the answer before I already asked them.
Yeah, so. He has the ability to go out there and win at Homestead this week. And, you know, he's 12-1 to win the race. He's 20-1 to get to the championship. He's also good at Phoenix. He hasn't been great in a cup car there, but he was really, really good in Xfinity. And we all know that when you get to the final 4, those cars are fast. So he certainly can get it done at you know, at Phoenix as well. I think Blaney has his hands full. I think that if there's one person that's going to struggle this week, it's going to be Blaney. I don't see his odds, you know, going down this week. You know, maybe going into Martinsville, you know, he's a little bit better at Martinsville than he is at Homestead. So I'm going to stick with Bell. I just think he's a really talented guy. But Chase Briscoe, you know, he could get it done. And if he all of a sudden the high line comes in like it did at Charlotte, and he obviously was good at Phoenix earlier in the year, who knows? But I think you're still better off taking him to win the race this week and then, you know, not betting the 40-1 for him to win the championship, you know.
Are you surprised that Chase Elliott remains the favorite given what we've discussed? I know he's NASCAR's most popular driver. You never know which sportsbooks have liability in any of these markets, so it's so difficult to speculate. But I feel like Chase's number hasn't drifted out whatsoever, and we're watching the 9 car waiting for that light bulb to click or to regain that form that he found in the middle of the season. I don't understand how a price just shy of 2-1 is enticing enough to get people to bet the 9.
Yeah, I think at this point he's a little overvalued. I know that, you know, this will be the last mile and a half that we have, so, you know, then kind of take speed out of the picture, and he ran well at Martinsville and he's always been good at Phoenix, but I don't think he should be favored over Joey Logano, who's locked in. Because, by the way, yeah, if let's just say Chris Bell wins this week, which could happen, and oh, by the way, William Byron won at Martinsville, and if those two guys are on the outside looking in and they punch their ticket by winning, well, you're going to have to point your way in. And Chase is not ahead of Chastain, and Chastain will have speed this week. So I can't believe he's short. I mean, I understand that the public's still going to kind of pour in on Chase, but he should not be a favorite over Joey Logano, in my opinion, someone that's punched their ticket and is good at Phoenix.
Yeah, I mean, that's what was so surprising to me. Now, I know everyone's path is a little bit different. We've seen how these things play out. But when I see Chase Elliott, given his current market price, and then I look at Denny Hamlin, given his current market price, I feel that the disparity there is a little bit mind-blowing. And I've debated, and I've told you that I've been debating for weeks and weeks and weeks, do I want to add the 11 to my portfolio as far as a championship driver to go along with a long shot price on Chastain early in the year, and what we told all of our listeners to pick up on Christopher Bell. Have not yet pulled the trigger, but there is no doubt an ongoing debate and a little bit of mental gymnastics that I've gone through trying to identify when I want to jump in on the 11 if I elect to do so. Anything else as far as playoff reset that you're looking forward to for Homestead and or Martinsville that our listeners should know before it impacts some of their wagering decisions this weekend?
Well, I'll tell you what, if Denny Hamlin had run really well at Martinsville, I would say that would be a really, really good bet, that 11-2 price on him to win the championship. He just hasn't had it at Martinsville recently, you know?
Yep. Great point.
So
great
point. If that's my only, you know, hesitation is, I mean, what I think in a couple of years ago, you know, when he was getting into it with like Corey LaJoy passed him straight up at Martinsville at a place where I think that was 2020 when that happened. But, you know, if he gets a 30th place finish at Martinsville, like, he ain't moving on. So, you know, that's the only, it's crazy that we're actually saying Denny Hamlin's the question mark at what was arguably his best track for a long time, Martinsville, is kind of what's holding me back from saying, hey, yeah, Denny for sure will get in. Now, 11-2, that price is great if he for sure gets in. And I think I plan on him running well this week. I think he'll be a top five car. So it's just a matter of, you know, does Chase, you know, how does he run? Chase Briscoe, that is. And does Bell, you know, get a win this week? So it's interesting. I think you're right that Chase is a little overvalued. There's a little bit of value on Denny. And, you know, who knows what Ross Chastain's going to do? You know, he's been racing fairly intelligently as of late. So
yeah, he's brought back the aggression too that made him so successful early in the year. And to your point, I think if he has a situation with Joey Logano, and this is, let's call it early April, he handles that very differently. He's thinking big picture now, but he's racing like he's got a chip on his shoulder. And still one of the guys that probably gets discounted by most casual racing fans that has a very realistic chance to take home some hardware that nobody saw coming back in February.
I agree.
Yeah, I mean, and I think you raise a great point talking about Denny Hamlin and some of his struggles at Martinsville. It almost begs the question, rush, and instead of going all in with a full position, if someone like me was considering it, do you dabble a little bit top five and top three this weekend at Homestead? Cost of capital, you're not tying up your money indefinitely with a chance to create a little bit of upside. But a lot to think about as you look at some of these playoff drivers and try and extract value from all the different betting markets that are widely available. When you're looking to Homestead, on-track activities will crank up in earnest on Friday. Forecast, though, in Homestead, as we always have to discuss this time of year, slight chance of showers seemingly every day in that South Florida area. High of 81, 4 to 4:30 Eastern time. Truck practice and truck qualifying on FS1. We'll see the Xfinity cars get on the track at 6:05 Eastern. That'll go to roughly 6:35 before they'll flip the switch from practice to qualifying. All Xfinity activities can be seen on USA Network. When you're looking at Saturday, very similar forecast. Let's hope Mother Nature complies. 10 o'clock Eastern time, cup practice available on the NBC Sports app, Motor Racing Network, and Sirius XM Radio, 10:05 to, we'll call it about 10:50 a.m. Right after practice is over, short break, and cup qualifying will get underway. You can see that the same way, NBC Sports app, Motor Racing Network, and Sirius XM Radio. The truck race, 134 laps, 201 miles on FS1. That's at 1 Eastern, and the Xfinity race in a doubleheader at 4:30 Eastern. You're talking about 200 laps, 300 miles. You can check that out on USA Network. And of course, the highlight of the entire race weekend down there at the Homestead Racing Complex, 2:30 p.m. Eastern, the Cup Race. 267 laps, 400 miles. You can see that on Big Boy NBC. That, of course, will lead right into Sunday Night Football or Football Night in America between the Miami Dolphins and the Pittsburgh Steelers. On to stage three we go, Worm, and this is the portion of the program where we preview the upcoming race. And I don't think it should surprise anybody that you may not be able to contain your excitement over there. Ooh. When you look at the Cup drivers, they stand one win short of breaking a rather sturdy record. 19 different drivers have won races in 5 seasons, most recently occurring in 2001. We'll see if we get a 20th winner over the next 3 races. The past 10 races, though, this season have been won by 10 different drivers. And the past 7 races, well, they've been won by 7 different organizations. So again, parity personified in its truest form. When you're looking at Homestead, it's a mile and a half track, a favorite of several Cup Series drivers, mainly so because it produces competitive racing. It's high speed, high tire wear. We've grown accustomed to changing track conditions that you alluded to at the top of the show. When it was the championship race, it started during the day, finished at night, when it was significantly cooler. Obviously a bit different given the start time and calendar placement compared to where it's been the last 2 seasons, where it used to serve as the final Cup race from 2002 to 2019 and crown a champion. And I guess the first question I have for you, overarching as we always do, from track comps, is it as straightforward as saying, hey, look, it's a mile and a half track, we're going to treat it as such? Do you look at it in the same vein as you do Darlington and Auto Club Speedway that are both high tire wear? Or where does this fall when you start to build out some of your data points that you're going to place emphasis on for Sunday?
Yeah, I don't think it's any one in particular. And I think it's really, really hard if, you know, we take a look at this track or track history just at Homestead. If you look at the last few years, remember this was the championship race for, you know, however many years. Well, whatever that was the case, pretty much with the exception of Kyle Larson, the championship contenders ran first through fourth. So I don't even know that track history is going to be that, or is a telltale sign of who runs well there. So I would take a little bit of even the track history at Homestead with a little bit of a grain of salt, understanding that, you know, Ryan Newman, who finished like third or, you know, whatever the year he didn't win. Well, Ryan Newman's probably not great at Homestead, but he certainly had a fast car that day because he was in the final four. So I think you take the history of the track with a little bit of a grain of salt. And then when it comes to these other tracks, Darlington and California, I do think that if you're going to look, you're going to look at those two places. Now, California, that was, you know, what, the second race of the year or the first couple of weeks of the season.
Yep.
What these teams know about this car, it's almost like comparing a football team, you know, a college football team week one versus, you know, a bowl game. I mean, they're completely different teams. And I think that same thing happens in NASCAR. So yeah, it's something that you want to look at, but not necessarily from a statistics point of view, but from, hey, this driving style was really, really good. Or this team had speed and maybe they just didn't get the finish. So I try not to get into like the nuts and bolts of the specifics when it comes to data or finishes, but use my eyeballs, actually rewatch the race and go, hey, you know what? The 43 car was actually pretty good at Fontana, and he was also good at Darlington. Maybe there's some value on someone like Eric Jones this week. So, but I'm not looking at, not saying, oh, because he was good at Darlington or because he was good at California. It's like, hey, I think his driving style is great for tire wear. That's more the thought process that I have versus, well, he's got great finishes at this place and this place. I don't know. Does that make sense?
No, it does. And I think it's a combination of factors. We talk about the calculus that goes into arriving at bets in any sport. You have modelers who live and die by their numbers. They don't care about some of the external factors, and they're using a large enough sample size that over time they're going to be in a good spot. We know you like to rely a lot more on your eye test and feel as components of it, especially when you're talking about pre-week bets. And so I do think it's important that you don't fall in love with data points that aren't going to be relevant and translate to what we're going to see on track this weekend. And part of it, you lead me in the perfect direction as far as a segue is concerned, into a relevant data point that we're seeing the NASCAR community talk about quite a bit. But do we throw water on this test that they ran there in September with these next-gen cars, using some of the track history, realizing how important this race was going to be? I haven't seen practice time circulate. We know who was fast on, you know, quickest laps, but you and I, we can throw that out the window when you're talking about tire wear and how quickly that can go by the wayside, 3, 5, 10, 15, 20 laps into a particular run.
Yeah, that just shows speed. It was really hard. There was no like long run data. I'm sure it's out there somewhere, but that's not what the public has. We're just going off of.
I figured you would have found a way to sneak in there to the timing pylon and be able to sit there with your stopwatch to
known.
Watch it with your own eyes.
I actually did that once at Phoenix. I did it. I'm not going to lie. I went to a test. I don't think I snuck in, but I literally was using my phone as a stopwatch because they didn't have like, you know, a live feed of lap time. So I've done that. I am not above doing that.
You were sitting up there on Rattlesnake Hill,
yep,
in your tank top and such with the stopwatch, trying to treat it like it was the NFL combine and you were measuring.
Yeah, exactly.
I get
yeah,
it.
And like, yeah, how exact is that science? You know, I'm using my phone from 400 yards away trying to guess where the start finish line is. I'm pretty sure it was really accurate. But, you know, I guess we can start getting into drivers. You want to do that?
Yeah, we can do that. I mean, and let's start with a driver, just his odds to win this weekend, because we know he's racing without the weight of the world on his shoulders. That, of course, be Joey Logano at 10-1. He showed a ton of speed here at the test a few weeks back, posted one win and four top five finishes over his last eight races at Homestead. But I guess the overarching question, how do you handicap the driver already into the next round? Or does that become an even better scenario, knowing it's true boom or bust for the 22 and he doesn't have to go out there worrying about points?
I actually like Logano in this scenario, not if you just take the fact that he's locked in, because he's just going to go win races. Like, the best thing that can happen to him is, I don't think he wants to see Chris Bell in that final race. I think if he could keep Bell behind him and he can win, I think that would obviously be advantageous for Logano. Now, here's the thing. He's just going to go try to get the best finish, you know, whereas you could see some drivers like a guy like Chastain, for example, last week, he knew that if he put up a fight with Logano, he could have been playing with fire. And so he let him go. I mean, he clearly let Logano go. He tried to hold him off, but didn't really happen. So that, I don't want to be betting on guys that are just trying to get a good finish. You want to bet on guys that are going to be aggressive. And Logano is, by the way, super fast on these types of tracks. He's been in these high tire wear tracks. He's been miles ahead of everybody. I mean, his average. So if you just look at the Auto Club and you look at the two Darlington races, I want to use those. His average starting spot is 3, which is the best. And his average finish is 3.3 on those three tracks. The next best person, the next best driver, Austin Dillon at 9.3, and then Eric Almirola at 9.3. I mean, he is way better than everyone else at these tracks. I think that Logano, I expect him to be good. I expect him to race predictably, which is going to be very aggressive. He's not going to worry about his finish. He's going to go out there and he's going to try to get a win. And he could do it at this track. He's done it before. I like Logano a lot this week. And it might just be someone that we take a look at for a bet towards the end of the show.
Oh, Oh, a little bit of foreshadowing here around these fine parts. I see where you're going with that. And again, these drivers really in no particular order as we kind of rattle off some of the playoff drivers. We'll get to the guys on the outside looking in that could have a say in terms of who grabs a checkered flag towards the end of stage three. Ross Chastain, we're 10-1. He's finished runner-up three times on mile-and-a-half tracks, scored two stage wins, and has led 383 laps, the most of all drivers on mile-and-a-half tracks by 118 laps this season. His average finish of 6.4 on mile-and-a-half tracks, the best by more than three positions, and his 1.5-mile track total of points scored is 79 more than the second-place driver. Aside from the lone playoff road course in Charlotte, Chastain is yet to finish outside the top 13, so he's been the model of consistency. He's avoided that calamitous finish that we talked about before we even went into Darlington. Ross Chastain, 10-1, fade, follow, or get out of the way?
Yeah, I just think Ross is going to be good. I don't think he'll be a threat to win the race. I mean, obviously, he could be a light threat. We could argue the term threat if you'd want. But I think that he's going to be happy with a good finish. I think he's ahead of Chase in the points. And if he can keep Chase behind him and he can pick up some stage points, I think it'd be a good race for him. Now, if he finds himself out there leading with 20 to go, well, that's different. I haven't seen much on from Chastain at the high wear tracks. I know he's really good at Darlington. The first race, didn't quite have it as much as, some other guys in that second race. So, I don't know. I'm just kind of like passing on Chastain. There's something with him. He's not racing like he was earlier in the year. And I think he's just kind of realizing, hey, I don't need to get every position to advance to Phoenix. He's like, hey, if I can just kind of take what the track's giving me, stay out of trouble, try not to piss off the entire field, I'm going to actually get race cleaner. And it worked at Vegas, and he got a second place finish. I think you'll see him just kind of, try to take points and be conservative. I don't know that 10-1 price would warrant an investment, but maybe in some matchups against guys that struggle in practice.
No, it's a great way to look at it. I mean, we talk about it until we're blue in the face. Some guys make for interesting outright prices. Other guys make for some of the derivative markets, and some guys you want to lean on or lean against in the head-to-heads, and maybe Ross Chastain falls into one of those latter buckets. Denny Hamlin priced at 6-1. His numbers as low as 5-1. I've seen 7-1, so we'll use 6-1, meet in the middle. Shown consistent speed at these kind of track comps all year long. Has a pair of wins and a 10th average finish, only trailing Chase Elliott amongst remaining title contenders. Third most laps led all time and a career best 137 in his 2020 victory. When you look at Denny Hamlin at Homestead, is he a guy that you've identified as someone you want to try and isolate in matchups or outright market, or is his price just way too short?
I think his price is too short just from what we've seen in practice. Like sometimes at 11, although they get the finishes, sometimes they unload poor and they qualify poorly. So I'd rather wait and see. Even if he puts it on the pole, you're not going to be giving up that much of a price. He might go to 5-1, but that also depends on who's outside of him and what practice looks like. Listen, if this high line comes in and it's the 5 and the 8 in Larson and Reddick up there ripping it, they're going to be the favorites to win this race. And I think Denny, you could see him float up. He floated up last week, and I thought he was going to be great at Vegas, and then he qualifies poorly and has an average practice, and he goes from 5.5-1 up to 8-1. So I think that there's just more, there's just not a lot of, upside to investing in Denny at 6-1. And until we see practice, and even after practice, it would be really hard for me to see taking Denny at 6-1. I don't like that price. That's just too short for me when it comes to Denny.
Hey, I mean, it's all about the number. And some drivers you don't necessarily want to stand in front of and the freight train comes barreling down the tracks, and others you just don't feel warrant inclusion as you try and build out that portfolio on race day. When we look at the other four drivers, and we can get to Chase Briscoe last because I know you probably want to hit there. Chase Elliott, 12-1, finished 20 or worth in three of the last four races. When you look at his last five finishes here, he does have three top 10s. But not again, one of his better tracks. We talked at great lengths about how the mile and a half program hasn't been great overall. So I'll group his teammate in William Byron at 12-1 in there as well. Four straight top 10 finishes leading up to his current form, but no finish better than 12th over his last three races. When you look at what some of his comments were out of the test, William Byron's response, just kind of learning this car at this racetrack. Try to get a baseline setup, I would say, and maybe a couple things apply to Texas. This was, of course, before the Texas race, possibly. So just try to keep learning this car and just get a little bit better. William Byron at 12-1. Can I interest you in the 24?
Well, you certainly can't interest me in his intelligence, because why in the hell is he pulling information from Texas for Homestead? Like, those things.
It's a great question. I read some of these comments and I go, yeah, it's a mile and a half track, but it's apples to bananas.
Like that, that doesn't even make sense to me. So, I think William Byron's going to be good. And, you know, he won the last time that we were there. The track did not have that super high line that we had seen in the past come in. This was at the beginning of last year, so almost two seasons ago. And he's had some speed lately. I feel like that the Chevys are just a tick behind the Fords and the Toyotas on this mile and a half. But this is, you know, this isn't like a cookie cutter mile and a half. This is something completely different with multiple grooves. I do think that he will be fast, and I anticipate him to be good. I think that 12-1 is a decent price on William Byron. If he qualifies well, you might see, you know, him drop down to, you know, maybe 7-1 or 8-1. So I'm more interested in Byron than I am, Chase Elliott. That's for sure.
Christopher Bell, Ryan Blaney, both priced at 10-1. Bell, as we talked about earlier on in the show, was the only playoff driver to record a DNF in Vegas. Slipped to last in the playoff standings, fortunately for the 20 team. The group has two chances to make magic happen, and we saw what unfolded at the Charlotte Roval. Meanwhile, Ryan Blaney, I think you outlined, and I have a pretty good idea of where you're going here, needs to obviously overcome his historic struggles at Homestead. Third place finish back in 2020 seems like an outlier, as he hasn't finished within the top 10 in any of his other six attempts, finishing worse than 25th in three of those. Seven starts at the Miami track, Blaney has just one top 10 and three finishes of 26 or worse, including a 29th place here in 2021.
Yeah, I am selling Blaney at high wear tracks.
Sell.
I just, he's someone that will qualify well. I imagine he'll qualify, he'll make that final 10 in qualifying, I anticipate. And then I anticipate him to struggle all day. I mean, he had one top 15 at between Fontana and then the two Darlington races. One top 15. He does nothing but kind of fade all race unless they really found something, at Vegas with that Penske's mile and a half program. I'd be shocked to see him, blow the doors off people here this week. I think that their backs are against the wall, and I think that they really should just concentrate on Martinsville, cause they actually have a legit shot to win there. You can't just fold it up. I understand that, but I am not high on Blaney this week, so he'll probably lead every lap and win.
Talking like a college football coach playing a non-conference game with dinged up starters. You know what? We're just not going to let him travel this week. We're going to focus on games we actually think we can win within our own league rather than stepping up in class. So obviously not a bullish sentiment towards the 12 this weekend. Last but not least, as far as drivers on the inside of the playoff picture, Chase Briscoe, you said this is a track where you think he can win. Is the price enough to get you to the window?
Yeah, yes, but here's the thing. I don't think that he's going to qualify well. So I don't think you're going to miss a price by waiting till after qualifying. You know, he would have to look really, really good to have his price drop a ton. I don't anticipate him to qualify well. They did not show one lap speed at the test for whatever that's worth. And I do think it is worth something. You know, Penske was fast at the test and then they were fast at the last mile and a half. I anticipate them qualifying well at this week, but you haven't seen good qualifying efforts out of SHR at all. You had the random Almirola poll a couple weeks back where it's like, where did that come from? But I don't anticipate them having a ton of short run speed, but you know, where Briscoe can make a difference is that long run high line, kind of loose, running the boards. I just don't think there's any reason to get involved with him, the 25-30-1 range until after practice and qualifying. Even if he looks super, super fast in practice, you're probably going to still get him at 20-1, which I think I'd rather, give up a little bit of that value knowing that his car is going to be good on the long run versus investing at this point.
So you mentioned the Highline Worms, or I see what you did there. Mm-hmm. Two drivers not eligible to win a championship that when the Highline comes in, run their best races. Tyler Reddick priced at 7-1 and Kyle Larson down from his opener at 10-1. You can disclose if you want to why he's 8-1 throughout the market. When you look at Reddick, he said how much he loves this track because when the Highline comes in, it suits his driving style as much as any track in the Cup Series. Runner up to William Byron at the Dixie Vodka 400 in 2021 and narrowly missed the podium with a fourth place result in 2020. That runner-up finish at William Byron last year did not sit real well with URI. I believe we locked him in at around 40 or 50 to 1 and thought we had a chance to really land a knockout punch. Strong showings at this race in consecutive years. Obviously the reason for optimism. Current form is there, and if that wasn't enough, he won Xfinity races here in 2018 and 2019. When you look at Larson, no discussion of the Highline and Highline tracks is complete without mentioning the 5. The 5, as we talked about, had his day and prematurely last week in Vegas. Imagine he'll be racing with a little bit of fire under his seat. When you look at those two drivers, 7-1 prevailing for Reddick, 8-1 for Larson, good or bad bets before we see these cars unload?
Yeah, the upside, or I think the only one that is worth playing would be Larson. I don't know that I'd play it at 8-1, but there's a chance. You know, we've seen some Homestead practices where it's almost a foregone conclusion until the race starts that Kyle Larson's going to win and his odds, you know, get beat down to maybe 4 or 5 to 1. He's the only guy where I could see that them really, you know, maybe having a 4.5 or 5 to 1, but we still haven't seen the Highline really kick in like it has in the past. And last year, Tyler Reddick actually passed Kyle Larson late in the race running the Highline. They were both running the Highline. I actually give the edge to Reddick as of late running the Highline. I think his cars are just set up a little bit better for that. Larson struggled a little bit to run that Highline, but if there's a chance that, you know, that Highline does come in for him or the car is set up properly, I anticipate this 5 car to be a rocket. Now, the downside, if you look back, Larson had the fastest car we've seen maybe in NASCAR history, or at least since I've been watching, you know, for 10 years. We saw that 5 car be the fastest car.
I like how you say, hold on a second. I like how you say the fastest car in NASCAR history, and then you preface it, yeah, as long as I've been watching for 10 years.
Yeah. Now, that's the same thing.
We know cars have gotten significantly faster there, but we typically don't like to talk in hyperbole around the Stay Green home office. So, but go ahead, continue your thought.
It might be the most laps led in NASCAR history. I don't know. I'm going to check in on that for next week. So yeah, tune in.
Coming with data, not speculation here. What the hell do you think?
I'm just guessing. Well, but the point I'm trying to make is Larson didn't even win there last year with the fastest car. You know, week in and week out, he wasn't able to get that win. He actually ran third behind Byron and Reddick. However, I do think that if this car is a little bit different than the car last year and they are able to rip the top more, which I think we've seen at Kansas more and at Darlington a little bit more, I think you could see the 5 ripping the boards and running really fast lap time. So, I'm high on Larson. I think that Reddick, you know, you could probably wait till after qualifying. Even if he puts it on the pole, he's probably not going to dip below 6-1. So I'd rather just make sure after watching some practice and getting some data from whether it's driver comments or, you know, loop data before we go to the race.
Two drivers, veterans with pedigree that I think are priced somewhat reasonably. Obviously, wanted to get your take on it as I feel like we run through the entire board. So we'll close up shop after this. Kyle Busch, 14-1. Kevin Harvick, 20-1. When you look at Kyle Busch, final 3 weeks of what has been a successful run, albeit somewhat tumultuous with Joe Gibbs Racing. Two-time Homestead winner and has finished in the top 10 in the past 7 races at this track. He's won 16 times in his illustrious career on mile and a half tracks. And Kevin Harvick won at Homestead back in 2014. Has a very impressive overall record at this track with 12 top fives, 18 top tens, and an average finish inside the top 8. Can I interest you in a little bit of stock in the 4 or the 18?
You can interest me in both of them, but not before practice and qualifying. Here's the deal with Kevin Harvick. He's going to qualify like a donkey. His average starting spot on comparable tracks is 28th. So, you know, that 20 to 1 will probably drift out to maybe 30 or 35 to 1 when he qualifies poorly. And Kyle Busch, you know, for someone that likes to live bet, you can just wait and get Kyle Busch after his first spin. So once he spins,
I was waiting for that. I figured it was coming. It was just a matter of when.
I'll tell you this right now. I can tell you exactly how this week is going to go. Kyle's going to be like, oh yeah, we were decent in practice. Maybe they'll qualify well. The first run of the race, Kyle will look like the fastest car, and it's not even close. And I will have a bunch of money invested on him in a live future. And it'll just be a matter of time until he spins, in which case I'll try to sell and I won't sell it in time. And then I'm stuck with this Kyle Busch ticket that, you know, I thought I got great value at 14 or 15 to one. And now he's one lap down and 30 to one. So I would wait.
You keep going on these rants. The Stay Green podcast will end up billing your medical insurance because we'll just lay you on the shrink's couch so you can use this as a safe space to vent.
I know. When was the last time he wasn't fast on a mile and a half and didn't spin out? He does it every time. Every single time.
Oh, he does. And he's had finishes. I mean, at least Kyle Busch is smart. When he spins out, he does it early enough in the race in the mile and a half. Hopefully he doesn't do damage to his car, so he has a chance to be relevant for a top five or in some cases a podium finish.
Yeah. I think the 18 will be really fast. I think the 19 will be fast. And I think if, you know, the setup works out for some of those SHR guys, you know, don't count out Kevin Harvick. But I think you can get a better price on Kevin Harvick for sure. If you're pretty high on Kyle Busch, you could go ahead and take that number now, because there's a chance he could qualify well, and he'll have speed. The Toyotas, they have speed week in and week out at these mile and a half tracks.
Waving the checkered flag at the completion of stage three, and want to remind all of you, our loyal Stay Green listeners, if you're not already following Chris on Twitter, encourage you to do so. That's at ChrisWormy15. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there. And again, most importantly, for all things Bet the Board and Stay Green, follow the podcast at Bet the Board Pod. Wormser, this is the portion of the program where we put your feet to the fire and try and identify at least one tangible, actionable element in addition to all the great nuggets you dropped on our listeners over the last 45 minutes. Where are we going for this fine program's best bet come Sunday at Homestead?
Well, I think everyone already knows I have Larson. So, you know, he opened actually at 12. He's down to, you know, 8 to 10 area. You know, I wouldn't be buying that at 8, but obviously, everyone knows, just full disclosure, I love Kyle Larson at this track. I think he's going to be good. But I do want to give out a different best bet. I actually want to give out a matchup. And just the top 10 markets, man, they've been kind of funky. Really, really high holds. And I think we're losing.
Oh, we're don't worry. We're pushing NASCAR. Had a little conversation and said I'd like to see yes, no's on top 10. Yeah. I'm not sure if the operators will get on board, but would be lovely to see slightly more efficient markets in that regard, but that may be a better topic for an off-season podcast. So go ahead.
Yeah, I am going to be taking Joey Logano minus 110 over Ryan Blaney. I think that this matchup is a slam dunk, and you know, Logano can go ahead to be aggressive. There's not a lot of strategy that you can play out in this race. Like, you could short pit, I guess, and maybe pick up some lap times on the front end. But I think that Logano is going to be with Paul Wolff. They're going to be on optimal strategy to win the race or get the best finishes possible. And he's been great all year, and Blaney's been terrible. I think that this number should probably be more like a minus 170 for Logano on Blaney this week. So I will be locking that in, and I think that's going to be our best bet.
And that's one of the featured matchups as part of NASCAR's weekly offering. So it should be widely available at all of NASCAR's preferred sportsbook partners. Ryan Blaney, a pick'em against Joey Logano. Chris coming in on the 22 over his teammate. Any final words of wisdom, nuggets you would like to share? Hopefully you've been able to save your voice after logging nearly a full hour. Soliloquy, monologue, whatever terminology we want to use that you'd like to share with the Stay Green audience before we bid them a fond farewell until we regroup same time next week.
Well, I'll tell you this. I showed up to my house today and I had a package sitting out front, and it looked like it was made in Asia somewhere based on some of the markings that
distinct possibility. Yeah. I have no idea. Point of origin. I can either confirm or deny.
And you know, mind you, this is a place I've only lived here for a couple of weeks, so not many people knew my address. And I open it up and it's this big neon green sign that says Stay Green. And I'm like, who in the hell has my address? And
the IRS.
Yeah, exactly. Perfect. I opened up this neon sign. It says Stay Green. And asked Todd, hey, did you send me this? He said yes. And so this will be going in the background of my office. And yeah, I thought it was really nice. And here's the deal. That sign's going to go on with about 40 laps to go on Sunday. I can feel it.
There we go.
Flip that
you
sign
can't
on.
Keep it on all race.
You
keep it on for your content. You can't keep it on all race. You flip it on knowing if the bets are going well and everyone is in the right position, flip that thing on, and hopefully that can be the mojo for the final three regular season races.
Yeah, well, thank you. It's very nice. I appreciate it. So thank you for that.
Hey, you got it, man. I love the content we're creating around here. I know the listeners do as well. Encourage you guys to interact with us as best you can. There's no such thing as a dumb question. Our goal each and every episode is to make you guys smarter and more sophisticated. There are so many different betting markets and sports out there, with the NBA underway over the last couple of days, the NHL, the baseball in full swing, and the postseason, NHL, college football, that there are still green to take home on the track each weekend. So for Chris Wormy, I'm Todd Furman. Best of luck with all of your homestead investments, and with a head-to-head matchup, Joey Logano over Ryan Blaney and maybe a little Kyle Larson outright at a price of 10-1 or greater. We'll see you at the window.